It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 204 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I talk with indie comics creator Justin Bartz, who has put together a wonderful book called Project Shadow Breed. It has to do with a hero who has something supernatural involved with him, and the government and business and all kinds of things get involved in the story. And I've only read issues number 0 and number 1 so far, but I really like it, and I think you will too. Justin talks about how he and his friends brought the comic together and what kind of reaction he's been getting, which is very encouraging, I understand. So I'm sure you're going to want to hear what he has to say. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. I'm talking today with Justin Bartz, one of the creators of a great new series called Project Shadow Breed, which comes from your company in Western Michigan called Different Breed Comics. Is that right, Justin?
Yeah, we're Different Breed Comics. Me and my friend Josh started a little indie publishing company here in Grand Rapids. Mm-hmm. It started off because there's no big publishing or indie publishing here in Grand Rapids, and so we had this idea for a book and decided to start our own company to help put it out.
Yeah, because independent comics these days seem to be picking up a lot of steam because you've got Marvel and you've got DC and you've got all these other standard stuff that's going on, but we don't get a lot of the creativity I think your book has, and I'm glad to see people like you are doing that.
Yeah, that was one of the things like Josh and I had been talking about. I mean, Marvel is rehashing characters and changing just the sex of the characters and just rerunning storylines. And me and Josh, we had this idea, and I was like, if we're going to make a splash at it, I mean, like, now's our chance. Everyone's kind of, you know, running out of creativity, and we had a pretty sweet idea, we thought. So this is why we took the jump. Try to see if we can make something happen with it.
Well, you see, you've got Comixology these days, which puts everybody in the same place. If you go through like a release date, like on a Wednesday, you will see everything out there, including independent comics, because they put them up alphabetically. And that gives you guys a chance to be seen with other books. Because many times I'll go to Comixology and I'll look and I'll see something that kind of fascinates me and I'll go, ooh, I'll have to give that a try. So I do those kinds of things.
We've submitted to Comixology. We're waiting to see if they're going to take us on or not.
Great, great. Well, they should. It's a good book, and it's something a little different, which I like. I'm always looking for something, a little variety in my reading. So you said you had a good idea. How did you guys come up with the idea for Project Shadow Breed?
Well, it goes back all the way to my childhood. Me and my brothers used to run around in the woods creating characters, and mine was a werewolf guy. And went through growing up and everything, and went through bands and different writings and everything, and I was sitting there at work, bored out of my mind, staring at my computer screen, and I just started daydreaming about this character, and I just started throughout the day just making up movies in my head about this character. And then, you know, I was bored and looked over at my buddy Josh, and I said, hey man, if I asked you a question, would you answer it honestly? And I told him the idea and asked him if he'd want to work on a comic book with me, because I had fallen out of the comic book scene, going into bands and everything. I had stopped reading comic books, and so Josh had still been up to speed with everything, so I asked him to be my wingman, make sure we weren't stealing or copyrighting anyone or going down a boring path, and he loved all the ideas that I started bouncing off of him, and he started bouncing his ideas off me, and about 18 months later, here we are. We have issue 0 and issue 1 out right now, and issue number 2 is starting to get speed up right now to get going.
Great, great. Now, issue number 0 is available. How do people get issue number 0? I always get criticized for doing this at the end, and people want to know sooner than that. So how do you get issue number 0?
Issue number 0, if you just send me an email to differentbreedcomics 2, the number 2, at yahoo.com, I will send everyone a free copy of Issue 0.
Okay. That'll be out on Comixology also?
I don't know. It being only 6 pages, we submitted it to them. I don't know if they're going to take that one up or not. And then we also submitted number 1, so I've been waiting to hear back from them.
Okay, so we'll have to keep an eye on it. Now, you guys have a Facebook page, right?
Yes, we do. We have Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We're on all the social media sites. Facebook, you can find us at, I believe it's just, if you start typing in Different Breed Comics, you'll find us. Mm-hmm. I'm terrible at this stuff. I should know all this stuff off the top of my head. I believe our Twitter is just Breed Comics, capital B-R-E-E-D Comics. And then on Instagram, I think we're Different Breed Comics.
Now, you have a website, too, but it's dbclunchbox.wix.com. And I got to there, and it has a slash Different Breed Comics. And you have a lot of stuff out there, including a special about, you're offering a yearly subscription to this book?
We're trying to get people to sign up for subscriptions and everything. A lot of it has been our coworkers and friends and family and people of our friends and family who got to read Issue 0. They started pre-ordering number 1. And we've been trying to get people via all of social media to start subscribing and pick up more orders, but we haven't really gotten too much buzz yet because a lot of people just aren't willing to jump into something new, I guess.
Are you going to give them paper copies or digital copies? How are you going to do that?
Either or. Right now, we just have digital copies on the ready. We're waiting for our prints to come in. Mm-hmm. And then once we get the prints in, we're going to do a big announcement, let everyone know that you can order the prints and have everything sent out to you.
Very cool. Now let's go ahead and get into the story. I find it interesting. This is kind of a mixture of superhero and supernatural, which I found a little interesting. You've got a guy who turns into a werewolf, and he goes by the call sign Merrock, which is the Scottish word used to describe knights who were believed to be werewolves. Do you have like a Scottish background, or did you know somebody who has a Scottish background? Did you knew that?
No, we started off originally going to call the book Shadow Wolf. Mm-hmm. And we started looking up, and there was already a lot of stuff, even though it wasn't trademarked or copyrighted yet, of Shadow Wolf, and we just didn't even want to get lost in that whole mix. We wanted to stand out, and so I started looking up different words for werewolves, and I stumbled across that term Merrick and looked up what the meaning and everything was, and I just fell in love with it, and I was like, that's such a sweet name for a hero. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I ran it past Josh, and he absolutely loved it, and we gave it the go. Mm-hmm. That's how we ended up with the name for him.
Now, his appearance is different from what we usually have in comics. He wears, like, a bandana over his mouth, over the lower portion of his face. Of course, he's a werewolf. Now, does he go back and forth? Because in the books, I've only seen him as a werewolf so far. I've seen 0-1, which I really like. Does he go back to human form, or does he stay as a werewolf now?
You're going to find out in issues 3 and 4. Sorry, I have to make you guys wait that long. But you'll find out more about him in 3 and 4 that he's actually stuck in a half-human, half-werewolf transformation. Hmm. I believe in 1, the accident is referenced, and the transformation actually saved his life, and that's what he's stuck in, a half-human, half-werewolf transformation, why he wears the bandana, because he doesn't want to scare the people he's trying to save, but he does want to put fear into the bad guys.
Mm-hmm. Now, the basis for the book, as I understand it, if we have a description on the inside cover, which is always a good thing so we know what's going on, is saying that the U.S. government began testing soldiers with the help of scientists who were employed by the aptly named Syntech Corporation.
Sinful Technologies.
And it says, with private funding and a strong backing from the government, they were able to develop a serum for the military that turned enlisted men into highly trained werewolf soldiers. But apparently this isn't successful all the time. Looks like this guy, Max Prescott, who becomes the Merrott, is he the only one that is successful with?
See, you're asking too much to give it away. Right now, he's the only one that he knows of who has survived.
Yeah, don't spoil things on me. I just want to know certain things because, you know, that you're setting things up where he might have to come across an opposite number who's like him, who survived all as well as he did. So these are all kinds of conjecture on my part, having read comics for a long time. I see some of these things coming. Whether you do that or not, I don't know. But I'm fascinated by the concept of it. So it's really interesting to me that the government and the Syntech Corporation are involved. Because you don't often see, these days, the government and businesses kind of are head-to-head. It's interesting that these two actually work together.
Yeah, I'm trying to just create that whole behind-closed-doors type with how much involvement the government is with the corporations trying to use each other's resources to help one another's gain. And the FinTech corporation and the government, he's going to start finding out more about himself and more about them and more about the government's involvement throughout the story. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's going to lead into different allies, different enemies, all that good stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of good things. One of the things I love in issue number one, you have a lot of fun dialogue. There's lots of good artwork, and it's very interesting dialogue along the way. This one guy who is called the Persuader is taking on Marak, and he has a wonderful line where he talks to him because he can't quite hit him. He says, "Hold still, my fist has something to tell you."
Yeah.
I love that line of dialogue because it's just, I could see that the kind of dialogue I would see on television and really enjoy. I just thought it was good. And there's another one, and let me find it real quick. Oh, it says, he responds to the Persuader. He says, "Fee, fi, fo, fum, what truck stop did you come from?" Which I liked. That was another great line of dialogue. Both of those lines particularly stood out to me. There's lots of good dialogue, and you get a lot of interesting conflict between those two. And I really like that. Are we going to see this kind of thing? Do you plan for, like, Persuader-like people, or are they going to change as Marak kind of goes through these things? What kind of people is Marak going to fight?
It's going to be some people like the Persuader, different hitmen or bounty hunters coming to town, different villains will start popping up, but it is going to be, I'm a big fan of the 90s style of comics and like the cheesy 90s action movies and 80s action movies. So there is going to be a lot of those, you know, almost cheesy one-liners. Mm-hmm. If you think, and the two lines that you actually talked about were actually two of the lines that we added like last minute to those pages, because those pages were unbalanced with the artwork and the dialogue, mm-hmm. and we wanted to balance it out, and I needed to add some stuff. And so I was watching Roadhouse on the TV for motivation, mm-hmm. and started just those fight scenes, just "You're too stupid to have a good time." Those cheesy one-liners were always my favorite from those movies, and so I wanted to add stuff like that. So like the "Hold still, well, my fist has something to say," and mm-hmm. stuff like that. That's where those ones came from.
There's another one I really like. He says, "How are you still standing?" And Marak responds, "A gentleman never tells," which I liked. So there's a lot of great dialogue in here. And it's what's interesting.
Well, thank you.
I really like that because, and these kinds of things, you'll normally just see punching and kicking and things like that. But you're actually adding some intelligence to it, even though they're in the middle of us of what is a really strong fight that the two of them are going through. So I like that. That was really good. And I got to ask, of course, too, this is set in Seattle, which, you know, most comics are in New York City. You know, it's the trope that everybody does. Why did you choose Seattle instead of someplace like New York?
I wanted to do the Seattle scene. It was more Josh's idea to bring it into Seattle for the whole him trying to keep his cover being like this monstrous looking person, even though he's a good guy and trying to help people out. We wanted to keep it more like a grungy, dirty look for him. And we were kind of sick of, you know, New York being everyone's focal point. So we wanted to go someplace where we didn't really think comics have gone, and a place that was real, where we could use the dark colors a lot and keep him well hidden, you know, at first. And so it was, Josh said, "Let's do Seattle." And then that's how he kind of started getting his grungy look with the bandana and the elbow rags and everything like that.
Really cool. I like that because, you know, as you said, everybody does New York. You know, New York City should have been destroyed five times over by now. And
yep.
You know, it should have been destroyed, and people should be constantly rebuilding it in the comics because it's just endlessly getting shattered.
Yep.
So I like the way that you've done something different. Now, in issue 1-2, you also introduce a different character than I expected. A gentleman who raised, apparently, Marak when he was a kid. Do you want to talk about that character a little bit?
Leroy?
Yeah.
Old Leroy?
Yeah.
What you're going to find out is Leroy didn't raise him as a kid. Mm-hmm. He was his general, or one of his lieutenants when he was in the Marines. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of in charge of Project Shadowbreed when it was going on.
Oh.
And those two, when we're going to do some flashback scenes showing them building that relationship when he was still a young 18-year-old recruit. And how he helps move him along.
Because it's kind of interesting. At the beginning, of course, Murak says, no, I don't need your help, kind of stuff. And, you know, things, as the comic progresses, the relationship alters some, which I don't want to spoil. But it was really interesting to see, because, you know, comic books also, another thing that often happens is you might have an older person, and they might be sort of patronly and kind of give you sage advice occasionally, but he does a little more than that, which I appreciated, to see something a little different. And I like the character, and I like the way that you're doing things against type in comics. Did you guys set up, you know, obviously you don't want to do what Marvel and DC does because, you know, they're doing that. Did you guys, when you set out to do these comics, and you got another one coming in the works, I read, did you want to do that very differently, make this something separate from them?
Yeah, definitely. That is the last fiber in my being of conforming to having a job and doing all that stuff is I have this little bit of anarchist punk rock still in me. And I wanted to still somehow give that middle finger to the man and do something my way and show that my way can work. And that's why we're going independent. Josh and I were the head creators and writers. Matt, he gives us his two cents with the how he wants to do the art. We really pretty much kind of give him freedom on the art and told him we want it grungy, we want it dirty, like just have fun. Mm-hmm. Me and him will bounce ideas off of each other, but we pretty much kind of did an amazing job.
Okay, because one of the things I noticed too is the coloring is different. You give, when Murak talks, it's black background with white words, and when Persuader talks, it's yellow background with black words, and when other people talk, it's mostly just white background with black words, kind of the way we expect everybody else to speak. So that helps us know a little bit better who's talking. And I like that because visually I need sometimes to go back on a panel and try to figure out who said what. Because, you know, they'll have four or five different discussions back and forth and I have to figure out who's saying what to who. But with the way you guys did it, it's easy to tell who's speaking.
Yeah, that would be all on Matt. Matt, when he did the lettering for this one, as much as he hated it, we gave him the full creative go on it and he worked his magic making it stand out that way. That was one of the things that I liked too, because I'm colorblind.
Oh.
So being able to have the different dialogues with the different backgrounds for the characters helps even me a lot. And it helped my brother, who's also colorblind, read it. He could follow along too.
Oh, wow. Because it's interesting too, when the book starts out, you've got yellow and orange colors happening in issue number one, which I found interesting. And then when something of the same sequence hits later, it's much more it starts out that way, but then it moves into more realistic colors as far as that goes. Did Matt have something he wanted to accomplish with that? Was that, you know, why did he do something like that?
Matt was doing a flashback sequence. So when it's in that orangish, yellowish hue, it's the past tense. And then you come fast forward to the morning of, and you see the interactions between Leroy and Merrick. And then when you get to that sequence again, the page kind of starts on the top left corner in that orange and fades to the present time color. So it kind of visually helps you progress through time while also letting the word boxes kind of help carry you along if you weren't being able to follow along with that.
Yeah, that looks much better. I should have seen the present time thing up there. That would have also given me a clue on that, because I like that very well. Now, you said this was mostly creative from, you know, your imagination stuff. Were there any people that you used as sort of models for these characters?
Oh, yeah, definitely. A lot of Merrick's stuff comes from myself and my friends. We're very sarcastic and witty.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like to use that with Merrick's writing. And then Leroy is, you know, his stubbornness and the way he's, you know, always looking out for Merrick, but kind of being a hard ass, that's after my stepdad, who I call my dad, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where I was using that motive. And then having the relationship between them, like a father-son relationship, but still they're hard on each other, but they love each other. So it's trying to give that feel of I love you like a son, stepson, father-son relationship, but that's where that kind of came into. Yeah, that's that.
Okay, because I liked them real well. I thought that the characters had a very realistic feel to them, which is something not every comic does. A lot of people can be very two-dimensional, but you guys weren't. The characters were very three-dimensional in the sense that we could understand their feelings and what was going on with them and why they were doing what they were doing. And I liked that. I wish more comics did that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we wanted to build a relationship with the reader and the characters, because important characters throughout
these books, they're going to die. And in our universe, there is no coming back. There is no 15 different versions of the same character in multiple timelines. We're trying to keep this one as much realistic in timeline as possible. And when cities or something crumble or get invaded, it's going to be a while that city is getting rebuilt, and it'll be referenced a lot. And the goal is for this to continue on down the line, so you guys get to actually follow these characters and people who come in and out of their lives and the events that happen to them, how it changes them throughout the books until the end.
Very good, very good. Now, issue one, that's available now?
Yep, the digitals are available right now. We're waiting for the prints to come in.
Okay, now, if somebody wants to get the digital version, how do they do that? The same thing, they email you?
Yep, you can email me again at via PayPal. It'll be $2 for a digital copy, but it's at that website, D as in dog, B as in boy, C as in cat, lunchbox.wix.com/differentbreedcomics. And then via PayPal, put in a digital copy number one in the subject and send over the $2, and I'll be emailing you back digital copy.
That'd be cool, because I think people will enjoy this book. I think it's something different. It's very fast-paced. There's lots of action going on, as well as when it slows down for character bits, it doesn't really interrupt the story, which I really liked. So there's a lot of good things to this book, and I'm looking forward to issue two. I can't wait for that to come out, and I'm anxious for people to get issue one in their hands, because I think issue zero and issue one would give people a good basis on which to enjoy this book.
Yes, and thank you so much. It was nerve-wracking for me to put all this time and my heart and soul into these characters and try to bring them to life. This is my first time writing a comic. Mostly I was writing songs and stuff like that, so this is the first time not trying to rhyme the words together and actually tell a story.
It's funny because I'm helping a friend do an independent comic as well. And, you know, he gets nervous as every step, although there's this exhilaration when, you know, when you get the book done. And when he got the first issue printed and he had them in his hands, that was really something. He was getting character pages to see these characters he'd imagined before suddenly come to life. It's just something unusual, and it's just something special. I bet you had that same kind of thing happen to you when you got these things done.
Oh, yeah. I used to tell my wife the biggest high I've ever had was playing basement shows with my old punk band and seeing kids sing the lyrics back that I wrote to me. And the first issues of Number Zero came in when we were getting ready to go to a local Grand Rapids con up here. I came in the mail and I opened them, and my wife just sat and just watched me. I just held them in my hand. I was like, like, wow, like, this is right next to playing basement shows for me. Like this, I just sat there and stared at them for a while. Then I sent pictures of them to Josh and brought them into work, and we started handing them out to people who pre-ordered them. And it was exciting watching people like taking their work breaks to run to the break room to go sit and read comics and everything. And so that was pretty cool.
Very, very cool. Well, I understand that feeling because I've seen it here ourselves, because we're already into, like you are on issue two, we're on issue three. And he's so excited to get these things coming out. And it's like you, my friend Rick, is also has got other stories and other characters in mind. And you have that too. You have another book, according to your website, that's going to be coming out that you're going to be working on called Unbearable. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Unbearable is one of Matt's projects, and it's something that we're working on. He had done it earlier with another writer, and it didn't work out, and he got the rights back to him. And it's something that me and Matt and one of his other friends, Joel, are working on, trying to bring that over to us. And so it's one in the works. We also are working on another book that Josh is working on called Heatstroke. Mm. He's an actual character that we developed who is in our universe, and he's in Detroit.
Mm. That's funny, because when I was reading the book, I kept thinking Detroit was a possibility for this kind of dark action to go on. So that's interesting that you did do that. I find that interesting.
Yeah, but we have another character. His name, he's going to be in Detroit. And the actions that you're going to see Merrick doing in Seattle, you will see Heatstroke with the repercussions and the reactions to the event.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, as far as Project Shadowbreed goes, how many issues do you have in mind? Is this kind of an open-ended story, or do you have like an ending in mind?
We have an ending in mind, but we have enough. Like when we first, I'm going to have to back up a quick second. When we first started this, Josh and I never wanted to write into a corner. We never wanted to get stuck. So we spent about 15 months developing the storyline, all of the characters and their roles in the universe. Mm-hmm. And then we started just coming up with different, I guess, mini story arcs. Mm-hmm. And we probably, if this book took off and we got to continue doing this, we could probably continue this book and the other books for quite a while.
Good. Honestly, you can tell that when you read a book. And when I read the book, I could feel that there was a lot of other things that you were prepared to do. There's more story to tell because there feels like there's little hints and little allusions to things that you can do in the future. You know, some books are some are just straightforward. You know, that's all the story they got. It hits. It's done. You can, and then if they do other things, it just feels like it's been tacked on. It doesn't feel like it's got depth to it. But when I read these books, and that's one of the things I got excited about, was the notion that there's a lot more story that you want to tell, and you can feel that when you read the dialogue and read the storytelling. So I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, our biggest complaint about issue zero was that it was only 6 pages, and everyone was mad that in those 6 pages I gave you that good of a story, and they said they'd be done with it and were just mad that they had to wait to see what was going to happen.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, we're on to something. And then the same thing with number one, people were like, oh my gosh, like that just, it flew by, and they're like, well, what's going to happen next? I'm like, well, you got to wait. I can't tell you that. That defeats the purpose.
That's right. I got a big kick. I was interviewing James Tynion IV, who they were middle of Batman Eternal at the time, and people online were complaining that he had not given away who the big bad was until out of 52 issues, number 26. And they were saying, why didn't he do that in the first issue? When I mentioned that they were doing that, he laughed out loud. He said, what, you think we're going to give away the whole story in the first issue? You're crazy.
Yeah.
You're crazy. And I said, well, that was my kind of, I looked at it and I laughed because I said, you know, what's the point of buying all these issues? You could do it in the first issue, but why? You know, you want to get people to enjoy the story and getting invested. And I think you guys do that real well in issue number zero and issue number one. So I'm looking forward to other ones. Do you have an idea as to when issue number two is going to be ready to go?
We have a goal for December, like the end, like Christmas. Mm-hmm. Having a digital release hopefully around Christmas. Maybe Christmas morning you guys will be able to open your emails and it would be there. That's the goal. But right now it's just the money issue. Mm. We don't have a lot of money coming in right now, and with the holidays coming up and
right.
Josh and I both having full-time jobs, it's
right.
Everything's that. But I can't let you know, we do have the first 4 issues have already been written.
Okay.
So we know how the story is going to go. So now it's just the money getting them out to you guys.
Okay. I talk about this, seems like every podcast these days, but Kickstarter, have you guys considered crowdfunding in any way to help you with this?
Yep. We're going to be talking about that in the next couple of days here when me and him get time to actually sit down and start planning, because we think that with having a zero and a one out there, mm-hmm. and all the contacts that Matt has through his art and mm-hmm. the fans that we've been acquiring on social media, that we could probably get mm-hmm. Kickstarter going and get numbers 2 out faster than on our own.
Yeah, and it's great to do it on your own, and if you want to do it that way, that's perfectly fine. But Kickstarter or Indiegogo or any of those ones really help get that, because, you know, as I was asking the guy I spoke to last week, he was saying in order to get the book out that he wanted to do, it cost him altogether, it was like $17,000. And, you know, the people think the comics industry is cheap, you know, that there's no, it doesn't cost much to do all this stuff, but it does. And so with you guys, if you want to do a quality book, you're going to need a little more money than probably you guys can afford right at the moment. So I would recommend do that. I you know, it's up to you guys, of course. You guys know better your situation and things like that. But
yeah,
I just think that it also builds a fan base. That's another good thing about Kickstarter. So
we wanted to make sure we had some things up to kind of like give to people, like so we could donate signed copies of number one and number zero. We want to have a little bit of stuff built up for incentives to help people help us out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're going to be jumping on the Kickstarter bandwagon here pretty quick.
Very cool. Now, you mentioned that you had gone to a convention and stuff. Do you guys have conventions that you're planning to go to and get your word out through that way? Because oftentimes I discover indie comics through going to conventions. So are you guys planning to do any convention appearances in the next several months?
Our goal is in 2016 to hit up Motor City Con in Detroit, the Grasp, the Grand Rapids Artist Con, mm-hmm. we wanted to go to the Traverse City Con up at their Cherry Festival, and we wanted to do the Grand Rapids Con for sure, just so that we hit the ones in Michigan, definitely. And then the goal is to, if we are generating enough money and have the funds, to try to get down to some of the big ones, like in Chicago and everywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Cause,
that's cool, yeah.
Yeah, I think you guys are onto something good, so I would recommend get the word out any way you can. You know, you've got Facebook and stuff, and social media is always a great way to get the word out. And what I'll try and do when issue... So is issue one officially released now? Is that what's going on?
Nope, it's officially released. We released it on Halloween, October 31st, but we just have the digitals right now.
Okay.
So, yeah, we can just get everyone digital copies, and then if they want prints, they can pre-order the prints, mm-hmm. and then we'd be shipping them out when we get them.
Okay, what I might try and do is write up a review, because I write reviews, and try to get a little bit more to get the word out, as well as this podcast and stuff. But I like what you're doing. I think that you guys should keep it up, and you know, keep doing the creative stuff, because we need more creativity in the industry these days. So I would say keep going, and I really liked it, and I'm glad we got to talk, and maybe hopefully we'll get to talk again in the future, because I think you guys are doing good things, and I'm just kind of fascinated to see what else you'll do.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for all the support. I mean, it's great hearing that people are liking it and digging it, and yeah, just thank you again from me and from Josh and from Matt. I mean, that means a lot. Thank you.
Well, much success to all you guys.
Oh, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this episode. Be back next week when I'll have another great interview with another wonderful comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.